Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com. This is the Business Masterclass on and the Leadership Transformation Platform from 12 to 3. But 1 to 2 is our Business Masterclass. And the first half hour was our conversation with Belinda Wagner from USB Ed. And joining us now is Tanya Makwamu, MD of Pluritone. She's a SME owner, coming up with a very interesting product. You know, it's the modern age. Her background is Nokia and, shall we say, mobile. And she's certainly building on that. But let's welcome Tanya. Well, hey, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so the first half hour was about customer retention. We might just draw a link there with your business now, but let's just understand you a little bit more. You do have poor corporate background, as so many SMEs have, SME owners. That's often a good base, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You have some good corporate background, and that set a foundation for you. Tell us about that, but also you come from the DRC. So you were born and raised where exactly, and how did you end up here?
Well, I was born in Kinshasa, DRC, and moved here after high school. I decided I wanted to master the English language. I don't know how I'm doing, but...
How was it when you left?
I had relatives living here, so the transition was easier. But, new country and environment... like I said, the transition was a lot easier. So I went to UJ and graduated in logistics and transportation. And, you know, with the
years...
Why
did you study that? Why did you study logistics and transportation? What was that?
I have a passion for road transportation, commerce between the African continents, which I think there's still a great opportunity there. And I went in and studied that, but over time I just realized the gap that in the service from a technology point of view, and seeing how many African countries are underserviced, in that area. So my partner is a software engineer, we sat down and started the company. But in the meantime, I worked for Nokia, which for me was the best business school one could possibly go with all the changes and failure, but for me it was a moment of growth really and realization of what I wanted to do.
So schooling done DRC, just after school come here, go to UJ, study there, transport pretty much, and then go and work for Nokia.
Yes.
And while you're there, did you always know, I'm going to go on my own? I'm going to do my own business? Because from young, you had an interest in business.
Yes. Be it organizing events in high school and selling tickets and so forth, I always wanted to venture in a business of my own. So how and when, that young, I must say, I wasn't really sure. But it became clearer over time, yes.
How long were you with Nokia?
I was there overall 8 years, because 7 years with Nokia, and then the last year was in transition to Microsoft, because it was bought out by Microsoft, yes.
Yeah, one asks the question, who is Nokia these days?
Well, for me, Nokia was a great company culture.
It was, man. At one stage, it was amazing.
It was. And again, as an entrepreneur, it was a school of business, really, trying to understand how you must adapt or fail. That was the biggest learning from there. But there's echoes of Nokia coming back into the mobile space.
Yeah, I picked up on that.
Yeah. Yes. So they never really left. I don't think they could. And one must watch what they come back with.
They might just give some comeback. There might just be something there. All right. Just take us in the beginning stages. Then we just want to know how you started. For us, it's interesting. Yeah, that jump. So while you were still at Nokia, this idea started formulating.
Yes.
Of starting your own business. You started realizing needs across Africa when it comes to technology, I guess. Just take us on that journey, how and when you left and how your business started.
Yes, so you would realize, you know, in a lot of African countries, the benchmark is really to look into big European companies and software providers. And one, be it a big company or an SME, would acquire a piece of software and end up using only like one module because it's not really integrated properly with what they use or to their environment, really. So that's where we came in, is try to either customizing these existing, top softwares, or understanding the customer's environment and actually building their own. So it started here in South Africa back in 2010, servicing the credit bureau industry and also banking. That was in DRC. We saw a gap in the credit bureau and identification also, where there's a lot of fraud in the banking industry because there isn't proper identification of individuals in countries like, say, the DRC, where a bank will get a tender to pay out government employees, and without proper identification, they find themselves drawing a salary for this person, and then the same person comes back a few hours later. So, with that, we came with like security software and so, and that's how Pluriton
your first kind of product that you started?
Yes. Okay. And
were you still working for Nokia when it started?
Yes.
Colleague got things going.
Exactly. Okay. So it was, challenging, long hours, but I guess the cliche is there's no time when you're doing what you love, really. So with that, back in the South African market, we saw a window in the credit bureau industry trying to, again, in a more automated way, allow people to have access to their credit history and so forth. So servicing either credit bureaus or insurance companies.
So are you doing that now still, your business? Before we go to the latest sort of launch that you had, and are your customers more up in Africa with the base here, or is it locally?
Actually, the bigger part of our customer base are in South Africa, and yes, we do have customers in Central and West Africa as well. The business is still running, the software development business. The company is called Pluriton, and with that, obviously, that knowledge helped us into this new product we were able to launch.
Right, tell us about your new product that you launched a month and a half ago.
Yes, we've launched a mobile app called MaxiCash. It's a virtual wallet which enables African expats globally to send money home. We're just making it a lot affordable and faster to be able to reach out to your loved ones' financial needs. So whilst remittance into Africa is a portion of it, we enable direct payments to schools and hospitals also within our database. So that's the app itself has been live for about a month and a half now, and we had quite a good response to our beta testing phase.
So let me just understand, I'm a Zimbabwean who've come into South Africa,
yes,
trying to find work. Mm-hmm. And I am working, but I have family back home who have nothing. I want to send cash back to them.
Yes.
Is it going to help with that?
Yes.
Or I'm working in Europe and I want to help my family back home, because a lot of Africans are all over the world, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
And, and they want to send money back, but to do that is very complex, very difficult, very bureaucratic.
Expensive.
I was going to say very expensive. I mean,
yes, banker.
So there's some research that I want to just quote, and I think it just tells you the significance of the market and the significance of the challenge that's faced here. It was this research done, okay, it is a little dated in 2012, but I'm sure the problems have just got worse, not a lot better, where they said that from South Africa flying north, 12% of the remittances went through, or transfers went through banks, 8% through a post office type of infrastructure, and then 8% through transfer services like Western Union and the more, let me call them, the more established traditional credit transfer bureaus. So if you stack that or that all up, that's 28% go through, let's call it, traditional channels, and the balance actually goes through, at the time, was traveling through informal means such as taxi or bus services, and I don't know if you know what that is, but you basically, as I understand it, you give your money to the taxi driver, and when he gets to the other side where he's going in Malawi or wherever, your family arrives at said taxi driver and he imparts the cash. That's the taxi, that's the taxi system, and then obviously family and friends. So let's call it 70% of all transfers are effectively being done in
informal means.
Informal means. Yeah. So,
and they do it because of the expensive nature of doing it the right way, or why does it happen that way?
Well, there's two things I could, reasons for that. Is the cost. Obviously, it's expensive to transfer with banks and traditional agencies, but also papers, identification. You don't have, obviously, you're not. They're not able to help you if you don't have proper identification, in South Africa, with reason, So those would be the two main reasons.
Now, last year, there was an exemption that was done by the then finance minister, before we had our December moment. Nene, they did a exemption on the FICA Act, so you can now move 3,000 rand a day or 10,000 rand in a calendar month without having to go through all of the formalized identification, etc., that you need for FICA. But then the flip side of that is this whole cost challenge. Now, that same survey that I was quoting earlier also looked at the cost of sending cash through the formal banking channel and formal systems, and they came out at a number of, on average, it costs 20% of the amount transmitted. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't afford to have 20% of my salary disappear in bank charges. I don't know, Belinda, you?
No.
Yeah. So from a let's call it the customer experience perspective, that would be a big no-no in my book. So yeah.
So who do you target now? Your product, your service, your offering helps who? Is it that 28% as well as the 70%?
Yes, it's a bit of both. I would say mainly the 28%, simply because they, being a mobile app, so it runs on a smartphone. So there's a category of senders that I'm speaking to, but then again, I'm opening it to more a global audience, and then also the 75% from a receiving point of view, because we've been able to work with integrating to the e-wallet pro service, so we're able to issue a e-wallet Visa card to your what we will call unbanked population, so they have access to those to the services, yet it is limited, like Richard was saying, to it could be at 3,000 rand depending on the level of identification I have of those individuals, but it is a starting to for them to start using these cards into your shops and the startup banking, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think anybody should ignore that entry level point in the market, because the reality is there are many, many people that are working out of country earning less than 10,000 rand a month, and they're trying to when you're over that sort of thing, then formal banking systems start making sense, because probably the people you're sending to have a more formalized structure and are living in a different social economic band, etc. But when you're at that up to that 10,000 rand level, that's where it really becomes a case of, well, I need to send this money home, but I don't need to lose so much value that by the time it gets there, it's worth half of what I sent.
Exactly.
That also doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Okay. When did you jump from – when did you go into this full-time?
I left 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay.
Yes, 2 years ago I transitioned fully to
You said
to
that's it now. Now I'm taking the jump.
Yes.
I've saved up enough money on the side.
Yes.
And for a couple of months.
That's exactly how long it takes, right, to dry out.
And how has it been? I mean, you're looking back now. We want to look at the lessons in a moment. We've got a question from an SME on the floor. Mm-hmm. But before we go there, how's it going?
I would say that it's cash flow has been the biggest.
No kidding.
Really? Wow.
All of us struggle with
that. Oh, that's amazing.
It doesn't stop. I have news for you. It doesn't stop. Okay?
Yes, exactly. So whilst the dream and the passion sort of gets me up, I might say I stay up longer trying to watch the numbers. But there were tough times, and there still are. You know, it's a constant thing. But you know, and also just to go back to what was being said about customer retention, just learning also to part ways with the costly clients. Not just you know, not all clients are good for your business. And I think it's something to understand early. How to draft who is my client and try to find those.
Okay. I find it interesting, I know we've got a question, but it's interesting that you've already got to that point in a very, very young business that you're having customer retention and, you know, exit conversations. Belinda, I think, to our earlier conversation, that's a real interesting perspective.
Mm. No, absolutely. And I think the fact that you're able to identify it so early is, I think, will stand you in good stead. I think the sooner you know who your customers are and are really specific around your targeting, I think the better in the long run. So, yeah, absolutely important.
Okay, let's take a question. If you want to join the live SME audience, by the way, we don't take a lot of people, then you'd email kevin@leadershipplatform.com, 2 P's in the middle, and then you can join us here. And first thing you do before you engage the panel is you pitch your business for 30 seconds, and then the panel can comment, and then we can engage you with a question or whatever you want to add to the conversation. We've got someone. Go for it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tsepo Moloi. I'm the founder and CEO of Stockfeller, a mobile solution, an app that provides Stockfellers with the ability to administrate all their activities. We do this by simply through giving the tools to the Stockfellers. You can reach us on www.stockfeller.com, STOKFELLA. You can download our app on Android or on your iPhone, iOS, and use the app. We believe by revolutionizing the Stockfeller industry, we can help every single member pursue financial freedom.
Okay, and that's a big, thank you so much. That's a big market, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
People say we're not a saving nation, but actually there's a lot of saving, informal saving going on in the background via the Stockfeller industry. So that's interesting. I must connect with you because there's someone who wanted to introduce us, I think, to you. Are you part of an enterprise development program?
No, I'm not.
Not, okay. Yes. Maybe you're just competition for those people. But interesting, I think he says exactly what it is. Any comments on the pitch for his business? And then if you have a question, then you can...
I'm going to defer to the marketing expert to my left.
How did he pitch his business?
I was super impressed. I understood really quickly what your business was all about. It was very clear, very concise. I think it talks to what's happening. Just by calling it Stockfeller is awesome because people know instantly what you're talking about. So well done.
Mm. No, thank you very much.
And I see your app was developed by Tanya in studio.
Yeah. Correctly.
So
noted.
I've already checked it out on the App Store. I'm downloading your app as we speak.
Thank you very much for the support. My question to Tanya is, can I only transfer money to my family members, or can I transfer it to an NGO or to a church that I would like to support when I'm out of the country? Because a lot of us leave, but we have things that we support when we're back home. Can we do that with the app?
Yes. What the app does, it not only remittance, but it also enables payments. So say a father in Nigeria with students in UJ can now, you know, make payments for their school fees and put in their student number as a reference, and we facilitate that. Yes, we do connect with churches and NGOs, but we have a very strict vetting process. So you might find a couple at the moment that we're trying to grow. And yes, as we go along, there will be a lot more.
Chepo, how long has your business been going?
We launch on the 16th of March, so it's roughly about 2 months now. We're doing well. We have roughly over 1,200 downloads, 1,201 now.
Got to check out the app.
No,
guys.
Thank you very much.
Got to check out the app.
And we have about close to 300 groups all over the country, mostly in Gauteng. 68% of them, and we find that about 58% are actually talking about investment and savings. So clearly we can already define our market and define who is our paying customer end of the day and focus on that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll connect with you a little bit more.
Just a comment. I mean, I think one of the things we talk about South Africa not being a savings nation, but the reality is if you want to get savings to happen, collective investment type schemes and savings schemes are the only way to go, because it becomes the power of the collective and the power of, well, I'm doing it, aren't you, Belinda? And there's an element of positive group pressure to actually get people into the habit and the good habit of saving, and that's a huge issue for us as a country.
Yes. Mm. Just to add to Richard, I think for Stokvels it's a culture more than just the saving process. It's a culture of you coming together and having that one common goal and that enjoyment of being together as a family or as friends and or sharing that vision. You know, so that's why it works better not only in South Africa but in the continent. I'm sure Tanya can say in DRC, is there a collective scheme approach? That itself in Africa works much more better than a single person.
But the Stokvel industry is definitely transforming. There's a lot of other issues coming into it, isn't it? I mean, it's becoming more than the traditional Stokvel product and offering. It's becoming investment. It's becoming, in fact, it even migrates a little bit away from what Stokvel was originally meant to be. And I see a lot of debates and interesting shifts out there when it comes to this specific industry.
Well, one of the things that I've observed that I find truly incredible is that it's a way, you know, we talk about transformation in the country and empowerment of people. I mean, I had an experience, one of the people that works with me, she came to me and she said, I need to ask you a question. And I said, okay, can I help you? And she said, I need you to explain to me how I would go about purchasing MTN shares. And I looked at this lady who works for me at my home, and I went, why are you asking me a stockbroking question? And I said, so are you buying shares? She said, no, I'm buying shares on behalf of my Stokvel, our group. And I thought to myself, sure. Now, you know, we talk about transformation in the country and economic transformation. And, you know, when I had that experience, I went, okay, things are really changing in this country. And yes, it might be through a collective ownership scheme, but nonetheless, it's a movement in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Mm. Okay, we have one more question, but the last question to you, Tanya, is going to be, what's the biggest lesson you've learned as a small business owner over the last 2+ years? The biggest lesson that can help other SMEs circumvent the problem potentially if they knew what you know now as they start their business. But hang on to that. Let's get a question and a business pitch very quickly, and we'll end off with your last piece of advice. Go for it. Last pitch.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gift Pora, and I'm the founder of Timeless Classics Events. Particularly what we do is we concentrate more on kiddies events. And the one thing that we do that we've just introduced is having play parks in previously disadvantaged areas. We call them gassy play parks. So we get trampolines, we get jumping castles, we have popcorn machines, and just to have the parents bring the kids so that the kids can have a nice day at the park. And reason being is because we realize that in previously disadvantaged areas, parents often have to travel far to take their kids to be entertained. So that will eliminate transport costs. That will also make it easier for parents to come and just drop off their kids. And one other thing that we do is themed parties. We do pamper parties for kids. We also do birthday cakes. So that is basically what we do at Timeless Classics. If anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can contact us via email, timelessclassics.events@gmail.com, or rather at 084 0800-737-6953.
Excellent. Do you have a comment or a question for the panel?
I have a question for Tanya. You mentioned that you had the passion for logistics. So what I would like to find out is, what did you do in moving into the IT space? Did you take the two and merge together, or you had to decide to just, you know, let go of one? And how was that transition? Thank you.
For me, it was taking a lot of my learning in logistics, being from an analytical and strategic point of view. A lot goes into logistics as a field and just, you know, moving trucks. So really, you know, watching numbers and sort of end-to-end delivery, be it a service or a product. Whilst I've moved to software development, I still, you know, have passion for that field, a project that I would like to relook in a later stage.
Okay. Thank you so much. Some great SMEs. We can put them on the platform here, Richard.
Yeah.
Final comment. Biggest lesson you've learned, that if you could call all the newly established SMEs into one room and shout something out at them, what would it be? Other than cash flow.
Sure. For me, I'll put it in twofold. I would say start with what you have. Okay. In a way, yes, you don't necessarily have to delay your project. It's about how good you planning your execution. Okay. And ideas are not a monopoly. You know, whilst you wait to perfect an idea, somebody else will execute it. It's all about how you execute on your idea. I've had a lot of ideas pass me by, but you know, I would say start with, you know, what you have. That is
brilliant advice. But we live in a world full of contradictions. So number one is, the world expects more and better quality. But you can't wait until you have perfect quality before you launch and go, because someone will take it from you. And finding that balance is your instinct, it's luck, it's hard work, it's all of the above. Final comments, Richard and Belinda, if you have any final comment before we close off.
Yeah, I love that thought, and the fact that, you know, it's almost that saying of go now. when it's the time's right, the time is right, and you just have to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So just from my side, two things. I think stay connected in the method that your customer wants you to stay connected in, and then make customer service as part of your DNA.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And thank you, Tanya Mukwamu, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you
for bringing those excellent SMEs to the studio, and we look forward to engaging you again in the future. That was our SME feature. Next up, Transformation Platform. We're talking to Adil Nchabaleng. He's a very experienced businessman, but he's going to try and demystify industrialization, which government seems to be pushing quite hard. Let's understand it. Let's look at the past of it. Let's look at the future of industrialization, or is there a future or not? Let's look at good examples, bad examples. So look forward to that conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.